League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
We got to do the right thing for the franchise. You got to get over, you know, that Chris is going to leave. I still believe our situation was better. Chris didn't believe that. But right after that, you got to go to work. And that's what we did. Chris and I had a very good relationship. Did we have a great relationship all the time? No. When you're the head coach, you're going to have days when you don't get along with your players. And then you're going to have days when you get along great. That's just the nature of the beast. And that's called coaching. So there's nothing wrong with that. But yeah, I'm going to be clear again. Chris left because he felt like he had a better chance to win. All the other stuff is no fun because it's not true.
With Chris, the biggest thing is there'll be, you know, a Hall of Famer on the floor all the time. And he's one of the smartest players I've ever been around. And James is really smart. So it gives you a real chance to be able just to figure things out and try to make it the best it can be. But, you know, we were really good offensively last year. I mean, Daryl can tell you the numbers. There's no reason why we're not better. And it's still a long ways to go to Golden State. And at the bottom line is you see Golden State playing, you go, whoa, you know, we don't want to play for second. Nobody wants to play for second. So we're trying to get up there and be a legitimate contender.
There's a lot of pressure on James, especially once we got to the playoffs. Chris and him are going to carry each other through the season, get us in a good spot, good seed, and then in the playoffs we are so much stronger to face who we're going to face in the playoffs. With James Harden in his prime and Chris Paul in his prime, this gives us a real shot to chase the juggernaut teams that are out there and puts us right there with them.
Half the guys they traded weren't on the team at the start of the day. But they've saved themselves assets that they can still use in another trade. They've saved their exception, so they could still theoretically trade for a guy like Paul George and then still have a couple of options to go out and sign players. From a salary cap manipulation standpoint, this is grade A stuff. The Clippers did a good thing today. They realized something was over, and they executed something to help their team. I go back to one of the darkest days in the history of the Cleveland Cavaliers franchise, the day they lost LeBron James. They agreed to a sign and trade with the Miami Heat and later used an asset from that to trade for Kevin Love 4 years later.
I'm not saying it's a lot less, but I've learned that he's made it very, very clear that the one team that he would accept the buyout for is Cleveland. Definitely so. And I've also heard that the Knicks are aware that he wants out, that now is the time that he needs to be gone. I mean, obviously, Phil Jackson and James Dolan were on a different page in terms of what it would require in order for him to be gone, because Dolan loves the guy and wants him to stay. But he has reached a point where he believes it's time that he needs to go. It just has to be the right situation. Obviously, with a buyout, you're talking about taking less. And that's the one team he would take less for.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh, yes, indeed. Welcome to the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Thanks for being with us. My goodness gracious, we've got a lot of things to talk about today. Thanks to Jim Cushland, by the way, for sitting in so ably for me yesterday. It is certainly great to be back. And my, oh, my, a little baseball going on this afternoon, Cush. We didn't even have that in the montage. A lot of NBA stuff that is in the news, but baseball going on the field. Actually, only one game now. Tigers up 7-0, touchdown lead on the Royals. That one is in the eighth, and the Indians done. And on the plus side, 2 out of 3 from the Texas Rangers.
Actually, 3 out of 4.
I'm sorry, 3 out of 4, thank you. Correction. And how about it? Another outstanding pitching performance. Trevor Bauer outdueled Yu Darvish yesterday. And Corey Kluber with 8 dominant innings, 3 hits, struck out 12, walked just 1. That's an outstanding effort by Corey Kluber, the Indians ace. And the offense got some things done. It was a 5-1 win, the Indians
yep.
over the Rangers.
I like two things I like from that real quick. One, apparently that's Kluber's 4th straight start with double-digit strikeouts.
Yes, sir, it is.
And two, and the guys were just talking about this towards the end of the broadcast as I was hanging, watching it here in the studio, getting ready for the show. They won that series without hitting a single home run. Which is impressive. Good, because that means they're stringing hits together, and that's always a good sign.
Yeah, that's a very good point. They are. And yesterday's win, too, same thing. I mean, that's a very good point. They're getting production from up and down the lineup, and not from every single guy, but different parts of the lineup, as you say, and they're putting hits together and getting it done. So it's really nice to see them bounce back from the sweep at the hands of the Minnesota Twins, which cost them first place, to see the Indians, you know, surging forward again and saying, hey, you know what, this is still our division, and they are indeed now back up by a game over the Minnesota Twins because of this little run. So, which brings us to the question of the Tigers. As I mentioned, hey, congratulations, you're winning the game. But here is one of the headline stories of the day. MLB trade deadline 2017. Five best spots for? You want to fill in the blank, Kush?
J.D. Martinez.
Justin Verlander.
Ooh.
Yes, indeed. Good folks out of Fansided. Tigers need to rebuild. No question about it. They're going to have to be sellers at the deadline. You know, they sit where they sit right now, and that is closer to the bottom of the division than the top. They're, in fact, only one game out of last place. They're 7.5 games out of first place. It is not likely to get any better, and they're going to end up, after the All-Star break, becoming sellers. And Justin Verlander is still going to draw, as he always would, of course, even at his age, he's going to draw probably the best, you know, amount of prospects from a contending team that is looking for a starter to push them over the top. Now, he is not having a Cy Young year. He's 34. He's 5-4 this season with a 4.47. But it's not like, you know, his age has taken his fastball away. It hasn't. He's still throwing hard. But the problem has been in his command. He's still a power pitcher, and he's got to be able to command that fastball to be able to pitch off of it. So here are the five best landing spots now for Justin Verlander if the Tigers are ready to go and start, you know, thinking about which of their high-priced and high-profile guys they can part ways with in order to rebuild and really restock the cupboard, which it needs to be. Number five, according to Fansided, the New York Yankees. Verlander could end up with the Yankees. Kate Upton would probably like that because she is a model, and that's where she likes to do her thing, New York or Los Angeles. So that would certainly be a positive thing for her. The Yankees certainly need somebody like that to put them over the top. They're getting so much great production from so many young guys, and they've got some people that they might be able to float Detroit's way that would be of interest to them. Some of the individuals that could be, I'll tell you what, let me get to the rest of the teams, then we'll start talking about individuals that could be targets for return to Detroit to stock that cupboard. The second, or the fourth, technically, second one I'll say, but I'm going in reverse order, five down to 201, the Colorado Rockies. The Rockies still have a big lead in the second wild card race, so they're wild card spot in the National League race. They are going to be looking for somebody to try to put them over the top. Of course, does any pitcher really want to go to Colorado and pitch? Not that it would be his choice if they make the trade, obviously, but could he go there and pitch in Coors Field and not see himself lit up like so many other individuals have over the years? Do they have the kind of assets that Detroit would like coming back? Time will tell. Third, how about the best team in baseball right now, which would be, Jim Cushlin?
That would be the Houston Astros.
Astros indeed. Dallas Keuchel's health leading up to the deadline will determine how aggressive the Astros will be at the deadline. The inflamed nerve in his neck, quoting from Fansided, could keep him out until the All-Star break or later. So it's a little bit difficult to predict how well he will be, but Houston is the class of the American League based on their lineup alone, but they do need more pitching to solidify their status as the top contender in the league. One of the top five teams in the league is going to blow the trade deadline out of the water and vault themselves to the top of the pile. The Cubs did it last year with Aroldis Chapman, just like the Royals did it in 2015 with Johnny Cueto and Ben Zobrist. Could it be the Astros with a guy like Justin Verlander? And number two on the list, how about the Texas Rangers, the team that didn't have the pitching to hang with the Indians in this series just completed? Cole Hamels was a trade for Cole Hamels was a big deal for them. Obviously, he was on the DL, came back just a couple of nights ago, obviously, is not in his form yet. They have a need in the starting rotation. Yu Darvish is pitching well, but Hamels, like I said, just came off a long DL stay. Who knows how solid he's going to be in the second half. So they could go get Verlander, put him on there with Darvish and Hamels, and give themselves maybe the best starting rotation of the teams looking for a wild card spot. Obviously, they're not catching the Houston Astros. But the Rangers would certainly be interested in that to get to the wild card spot. And number one, congratulations, Kate Upton. You got the Yankees on one end, and you got the Dodgers on the other. L.A. or New York, which is where models roam and run free. The Dodgers have elected to stay away from blockbuster trades for the most part under the Andrew Friedman front office. They were one of the leading and logical contenders for Cole Hamels in 2015, but they let him go to the Rangers. Had they made that move, the Dodgers, now and not the Mets, might have gone to the World Series. Do they want to make that mistake again and not get a top-flight starter or a guy who has been a top-flight starter now to be a middle guy or maybe even the second guy behind Clayton Kershaw or the surprising Alex Wood? Kershaw and Wood combined 19-2 this year. Dodgers are 22-5 when the two of them pitch, which is pretty doggone incredible. Justin Verlander might slide in very nicely right after Kershaw or right after Wood in that rotation. So this is just, the question, obviously, what is the likelihood Justin Verlander will be dealt? I have to believe the likelihood is very, very high. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'll give it an 8 because they cannot. Alavila simply cannot just keep all of these high-priced, especially somewhat aging guys, knowing they need a full-on youth movement. And if the prospect package is right, it could very well be one of those five teams, Kush.
It could. I'm a little more pessimistic about it right now for Verlander specifically than you are. I'd put it at about a 50-50 chance, 5
wow,
out of 10.
Wow, really? A coin flip.
The reason being is the prospects and where he goes to aside, the other team in question has to be okay with paying Justin Verlander $28 million next year, $28 million the year after that, and a team option for 2020. And I think that's going to possibly hold things up. So when it comes to Verlander specifically, that's why I'm at 50-50. I wonder who's going to throw in for that amount of money for he's controlled.
The irony of that is.
But it's a lot.
The irony of that is, though, he's locked in.
Yes.
As opposed to this is being a 6 month or a 3 month rental.
And teams always like that non-rental, but really want to pay 28 mil because that's what Verlander's owed.
And a lot of that depends on what they really think about what he has left. He's 34, not 38.
Mm-hmm.
Could he still be a 10, 12, 15 game winner, perhaps at 35? Could he do it at 36? A lot of that has to do with the command that we talked about before.
Right.
That's up to every scouting staff to, and of course the trainers and doctors when you, when you propose a trade like
yep.
this, you got to make sure he's right. Now, a couple of things get in the way, though. Justin Verlander's a 10-5 guy, and you know what that means.
Yep.
He can veto any trade whatsoever. Tigers yep. would need him to waive his no-trade rights under the 10-5 right in order to go to a team that has a chance to win a World Series. But if you're Justin Verlander and it's the Dodgers, if you're Justin Verlander and it's the Astros, and maybe even the Yankees, you have to think, I got a shot here. I got a shot here at going to the World Series and getting a ring and doing my thing, here in my mid-30s. And so I would think he would waive those rights. I mean, why would – no disrespect, of course, to the D, but why do I want to stay in Detroit on a team that's going to be in last place or pretty close to it for the entire second half of the season? And Lord knows, because it's a rebuild, if I turn down the trade due to my 10-5 rights and I'm Justin Verlander and they end up trading other guys, I'm going to be on a team next year with a bunch of kids, young guys, either up-and-comers or hangers-on as we try to rebuild this thing. And why do I want to rebuild at 35, 36, 37? What's the point of that? I'd rather spend these next 2 or 3 years with a contender. So I think he'd probably waive the rights if somebody would be willing to pay that $50 million. He's owed more than $50 mil through the end of 2020.
And that's
the question.
That's why, to me, that's the thing I'm hung up on, why I'm 50-50.
Yeah,
but don't be
too much, Jim, because in those kinds of deals, almost always, the team that's trading the high-priced player is going to eat some of that. They're not going to make whoever it is take all of that on. They'll say, we'll take these prospects and we'll eat X amount of the Verlander's contract, and then you just take it for the rest.
Touche on that. I mean, example, the Tigers still owe the Rangers for 3 more years after this on some of that Prince Fielder deal. So touche on that one.
Yeah, so it's not impossible at all. And like I said, I think the motivation will be high for Alavila to get this done because, again, he's – they don't want to pay him the $50 million during a rebuilding period. Think about this.
Yeah.
When that contract was given to him, that long-term deal, it's, hey, we are arguably, and on paper, even coming into this season, Kush, that's what makes it so crazy.
Yeah.
On paper, coming into the season, the Tigers, Maniloff picked them to win the division. You still have a very capable run-producing lineup. And you do have some question marks or did coming in the bullpen. But you also had a lot of optimism at the starting rotation. Not one through five, but solid enough.
Yeah.
And when they gave him that contract, obviously it was to be the centerpiece of a staff that's going to carry us into the playoffs for the next couple of years or few years. Nobody expected it to be so underachieving. Nobody expect not him, the lineup and the yeah. roster. Nobody expected it to be so underachieving, and now they're going to have to pay $50 million to a guy for you know, being just a really, really shiny spot of a rebuilding under construction team, and nobody wants to do that.
No, and you're so correct on that, especially given the statements over the last year or so from Al Avila about the money situation on this team, particularly in the post Mike Ilitch era of the Tigers. Because just for reference, next year Verlander's at $28 million, Miggy's at 30. Justin Upton, though there's an opt-out somewhere in there, is 22. Jordan Zimmerman's 24, and Victor Martinez is at $18 million. That's a hefty price for just those five guys. I mean, that's basically all of the vast majority of their current payroll now is in those five guys.
Which we've talked about many times. You know, I mean, most of their money is in a very few guys, and they it just doesn't make sense to keep those parts around, for a younger rebuild.
Precisely. If they can alleviate some of that money, it gets them into what they're in theory trying to do longer term, which is, hey, we're not going to be paying these king ransoms for payrolls anymore. We're not going to go down to like bottom of the league, but we're not doing $199 million. Which is what the payroll this year is for the Tigers, for example.
The Tigers have the second worst record in the American League and a bottom tier farm system. We know this. The cupboard is pretty much bare. No disrespect to the Hens. And we got Hens tickets we're going to be giving away, by the way. But you know how it is, how these things are analyzed and how the metrics and analytics and everything else go.
Sure.
And they have a bottom-tier farm system. Everybody knows that. Selling off assets like J.D. Martinez, Ian Kinsler. That's the first guy you said was J.D., by the way. Makes sense for a team looking to start a rebuild. And I think Verlander would have to be at the top of that.
Yeah.
And according to some analysts, which I kind of like this comparison, they believe that a trade to a winner, a trade to a competitive team in a pennant race, would reinvigorate and get the juices flowing for Justin Verlander in a similar way that they did for Randy Johnson in 1998. At the same age, 34 years old, Randy Johnson was with Seattle, had a 4.33 ERA in the 98 season. A trade deadline deal to Houston put him in a pennant race, and he went 10-1 with a 1.28, struck out 116 in 84 and a third innings. That's the ability, obviously, that Verlander, I think, still has. But he's in a spot right now where he's not probably, I don't want to say he's not motivated. That's a terrible thing to say. He's certainly doing his best, but you know how it works. You know what adrenaline is. You know what it means to be in a pennant race. You know what it means to be before a huge crowd with first place on the line. And that's the kind of thing that it might take to get JV back up and pumping for somebody, either on one of the coasts, New York, L.A., or possibly down in Houston as well.
Yeah, and there are definitely possibilities. And that's why the Tigers also have to be, smart in how and who, they're dealing, get the right kind of prospect packages and help alleviate some of the future payroll, since we do know that they want to decrease that payroll, especially if they're going to go into a more retooling, rebuilding mode. Now, they're not going to be able to trade all,
right?
And they're not going to be able to trade all five of these guys, and it'll hurt, from a fan's perspective if you see a Justin Verlander go. But out of those five names I mentioned, I think you have to really, truly find a way to trade one of them. I don't think it's going to be Miguel Cabrera. I really don't think it's Victor Martinez, because, he's DH only at $18 million. There's not going to be a lot of things there.
So there's not going to be a line for him.
Right, so that leaves Jordan Zimmerman, Verlander, and Justin Upton, basically.
What about Kinsler?
Kinsler, as I'm looking at, he does have a club option for next year or a $5 million buyout. So if somebody were to pick Kinsler up, I imagine in the negotiations of the deal, the other team would want some assurances that Kinsler would pick up that option. So he is, in theory, you know, can be available for that team for another year, whereas J.D. Martinez, he's a straight-up free agent.
What's
That's
the
rental player.
What's the number for next year for Kinsler?
For Kinsler, it'll be about $11 million as it is this year.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and so that could happen. And then the flip side of this, as we talk about the American League Central, just a little baseball to get you going on this Thursday afternoon edition of the Extravaganza. Suitors potentially for Justin Verlander as we get close to, trade talks pushing toward the end of July. And the start of July is right around the corner, of course. The flip side of that, while the Tigers continue selling off some pieces, the other story is the Minnesota Twins, a surprise, a shock, really, a shocking second-place team right now behind the Indians only by a game here in June. They really had a hot start that most people thought would fizzle, but it didn't fizzle. They're still there, and a surprise contender now, they could be in the market to add long-term assets rather than sell off. Jeff Todd of MLB Trade Rumors points out the Twins are hoping to address long-term acquisitions as opposed to using valuable resources on short-term rentals. Thad Levine, the GM, has indicated that much recently as the Twins continue to stay, saying, quote, we're probably not going to be inclined to spend lavishly on the short-term asset, but we would be very open to spending aggressively on assets we could use to propel our team forward this year and for years to come. So this is a team that's, not used to being in this position. Certainly, I don't think a lot of people expected them to be in this position. So they might be a team that's interested in somebody that, well, you know, we just talked about it, guys that aren't rentals, guys that are locked up for 2, 3 or more years, but that might be on the block from teams that have fallen out, that are just looking to cut payroll and looking to rebuild. And, you know, I don't know how much the Tigers would be interested in trading within the division.
Right.
But there it is. I mean, that's just the different look at things from the top and the bottom of the standing.
And for the Twins' perspective, there's two dynamics at play here. On the one hand, you know, this is a team that lost 100 games plus last year. They clearly, even on opening day, the theme was, well, we're rebuilding and getting some of these young guys in. So that's one dynamic. And the other one is, though, they've hung around this whole time. Guys like you and me, Bob, we're still waiting for them to trickle on off, especially now that the Indians are a little bit over them in first. They're also, incidentally, the Twins are holding, even though it's going to be really chaotic for this down the stretch, they're holding the second wild card. So you want to do something to keep improving those chances, because I've been pointing out whenever this topic comes up, at least for that second wild card spot in the AL, you know, forget the division for a quick second. The second wild card spot is going to go down in the AL as a giant smorgasbord of mediocrity, basically, and whoever could be left standing on that. And the Twins are, to their credit, have put themselves in good position. So you got that double dynamic there of, well, yeah, because they don't want rentals. You would want guys that they can control for a couple more years because in
especially
theory,
because they don't believe
right
that they are just a player, a rental away from winning the whole
Bingo.
Thing. If you did, you're willing to do that.
And if you did, you wouldn't
though,
be going into the season thinking, well, we're in rebuild mode because we just lost 100 games.
Right.
Let's get some of these kids up.
Right, exactly. You know, I mean, and like I said, you know, they started out hot. People thought it would fizzle. It hasn't. They realize, though, that this isn't who they are. You know, they're not a better team than the Indians. They're not a better team than the Astros. They're not a better team than the Yankees. They're not going to win the American League flag. So that's why they're not willing to go into the short-term thing.
Right.
They can add assets now from teams willing to deal because of their own circumstances, like the ones the Tigers find themselves in, and there are other teams, too. That's why they'd be willing to look long-term. Not short-term, but
long-term. Exactly.
Because they're not a short-term threat to win it.
Right, right. But the partial flip side to that is you mentioned a couple teams that they shouldn't be better than, but at the same time, I think they're a little better than the Rays and the Angels. Maybe the Rangers unless the Rangers can, you know, right themselves. And that's who they're competing with for this final wild card spot, which is very much going to be in play, assuming a giant skid doesn't come along for them.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a very good point. So that is, a couple of different vantage points to look at it from. So talking a little baseball, a little bit of trading, potential here as we get close to the, that season, as we get close to the All-Star break, which comes up in about a week and a half. And, obviously at the end of the month of July, that'll be done. So we'll get a little bit of a look there. And by the way, one more note on baseball. And this really needs to be said with all of the reverence I think that we can muster. It's a sad moment for one of the great careers and one of the most interesting guys pretty much ever. As today, the Atlanta Braves have designated for assignment right-handed pitcher Bartolo Colon.
I saw that not too long ago.
Bartolo Colon's career is very likely over, and what an amazing career it has been. On this date in 2002, 15 years ago, the Indians send Bartolo Colon to the Expos. 15 years later, as ESPN puts it, the trade just keeps on giving. When Bartolo Colon was scheduled with Bartolo Colon scheduled to return to the Atlanta Braves in the near future, it's an appropriate time to reminisce. And this is from a couple of days ago, as it's 15th anniversary of a historic trade, which was this, of which he was the centerpiece. June 27th, Colon went from the Indians to the Expos. You remember who they got for him, right?
Oh yeah,
combination of Cliff Lee, Grady Sizemore, Brandon Phillips, along with veteran first baseman Lee Stevens. Bartolo Colon went, along with Tim Drew, to the Expos. Colon delivered exactly what he was supposed to deliver, as we just kind of reminisce a little bit here. Colon pitched like the ace that he was supposed to be, went 10-4 with a 3.31 ERA in four complete games, finishing the season with a combined 20 wins. One of two times in his career he won 20 games. But the trade didn't work out that well for the Expos because the rest of the team failed to deliver around him. But Colon's post-Expos path then was just one of legend, as he kind of went from here to there, and everywhere he went, he was supposed to be done. Everywhere he went, he looked like he was a little heavier than it was in his last stop. He shouldn't be, right? I mean, he should not be to do the things that he was able to do this deep into his career, this deep into his life cycle. Because usually it's guys who play well and pitch well into their 30s or into their early 40s. They're rocks. They're built like, you know, like Sherman tanks, not like Pillsbury Doughboys. And Bartolo Colon, the rotund one, managed to go 19 years. 19 years. But what does it say just about the fickleness of baseball and the fickleness of time, Cush? That in 2016, one season ago, Bartolo Colon was an all-star. He went 15-8 for the season with a 3.43 ERA. Bartolo Colon was an all-star. This year, less than one calendar year later, Bartolo Colon DFA'd with an ERA of 8.14 after 13 starts. That just lets you know how fast you can fall off that proverbial cliff. The only undefeated fighter in history is Father Time, and he catches up with you and hits you with that right hook whenever he damn well feels like it, and it looks like he finally caught up to Bartolo Colon. How old is Bartolo?
44.
44 bleeping years old. And finally, it looks like he's suffered the knockout punch.
And you talk about reminiscing. For me, as you're saying that, I'm thinking of reminiscing. I'll say this much. As I'm thinking back to his Colon's rookie season with the Indians, when he started and won Game 3 of the 1998 ALCS against the Yankees, I'll go ahead and say it. I sure as heck didn't think we'd still be talking about him in 2017.
And not only are we talking about what he did, we got to talk about the impact that he had on even, let's say, the current Cleveland Indians. Because if you want to follow the lineage of Bartolo Colon and that trade was made, as mentioned, for Grady Sizemore, Brandon Phillips, and Cliff Lee.
Right.
Cliff Lee ended up in July of 2009 being moved from the Indians to the Philadelphia Phillies for four prospects, including somebody who happens to be one of the top two pitchers in the rotation right now in 2017, Carlos Carrasco. In fact, the Indians have gotten a combined 30 WAR from Cliff Lee and Carlos Carrasco. If you are into those stats, and I'm not really, but I just think it's kind of cool.
I'm not either, but I know that's a big one.
It is. When you combine those two guys, this is ESPN doing the numbers for us. The WAR after the trade for Cliff Lee was 43.3. Brandon Phillips, by the way, these are what the Expos gave up to get Bartolo, 31.5, and Grady Sizemore, 27.2. Bartolo Colon's WAR was 2.4 with the Expos. But you cannot measure this man's 19-year career through the age of 44 with some metric like that. Nope. You've just got to watch and appreciate and enjoy what this guy did.
Yep.
And including that home run that he – was that last season or was that in 2015?
You know,
first home run in his career, oldest player to hit his first. I think he was 42, so I think it was 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was 2015.
Yeah, it was one of the biggest blockbuster trades ever, and the Expos got Bartolo, and Bartolo's career just kind of bounced from here to there to everywhere after. He's Johnny Cash. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere. Cleveland, Montreal, Chicago with the White Sox, Anaheim with the Angels, Boston with the Red Sox, back to the White Sox, out to the Yankees, out west to the Oakland A's, into the Apple with the New York Mets, and finally this year, the Atlanta Braves. 19 wonderful years, 19 improbable years, 19 impossible years, let's be honest. I mean, just to throw this at you. In 2002, when he was traded by the Indians, he had that 2.55 ERA that season, 2.55. One of the most reliable starters in the game for a period of time, which had him with a 2.55, a 3.31, a 2.93, 3.87, then bumped up to a 5.01 out in Anaheim. 3.48, 5.11, 6.34. How are you still in the league with ERAs over 5 and 6?
Right.
Well, maybe because in 2008, I got it down to 3.92 with the Red Sox, 4.19 with the White Sox, 4.00 with the Yankees. And now as I get older and fatter, I'm starting 24 games for the A's with a 3.43. And then why not the next year I'll start 30 more games, older and fatter yet in 2013, with a 2.65 ERA going 18 and freaking 6 and being a Cy Young candidate. And that's what's amazing about him.
I know.
He was done 8 years before that.
Exactly. By all statistics, he should have been done 8 years ago.
And then he ballooned, literally, from a 2.65 in 2013 with the A's to a 4.09 with the Mets in 2014, but still started 31 games, gave them a reliable arm. And if you're right at 4.00 and you're 41 years old, God bless you.
At 41 years old, the 31 starts is more important than any ERA, really.
Well, just FYI, the next year, he did it again a year older, 31 more starts, 33 appearances, 31 of them starts, a 4.16 ERA, won 14 freaking games. Then last year, as mentioned, what the hell, at the age of 43, I'm going to start 33 games, win 15 of them, and have an ERA of 3.43, making the All-Star game.
Unreal.
At 43, in about 426 pounds, I think. And then
somewhere
this
in that
year,
neighborhood.
And then this year, of course, like I said, Father Time just said, okay, you're done. Father Time walked to the mound, signaled for the lefty, and said, hit the showers there, Bart. You done good, kid. And that's the end of it. What a great story. He's just a very likable dude, too. All right. I guess it's just because he's, no, never mind. I won't say that part. All right. Here's what we'll do. Since we talked baseball for this whole first 40 minutes of the broadcast, let me hook you up with some, Hens tickets. Hens are playing the Clippers. So it's, young Tigers against young Indians coming up at Fifth Third Field on Saturday. Day after tomorrow, July 1st. So if you would like to go, I got a pair of tickets with your name on them. If you are fifth caller right now. Fifth caller to eight. No, you know what? In honor of Bartolo Colon's 44 years, 4 plus 4 is 8. Eighth caller. How's that sound? Caller number 8, 866-240-1065. You'll get those tickets, and we'll be right back after this. Which, of course, now begs the question, how much would LeBron James want to play with his buddy Carmelo Anthony if it cost him Kevin Love, who is such an important part of the puzzle that the Cavaliers have built? And I'll tell you something else. I don't know if it's an unreasonable dislike of Carmelo Anthony's game or his general persona, but I don't like the idea because I don't like Carmelo Anthony as a competitor, not as a human being. From virtually all accounts, he's a great guy. He's obviously a brilliant negotiator, too, because he was able to get all that money from the Knicks and a no-trade clause at a time when no-trade clauses are pretty rare, pretty hard to come by in the NBA. Carmelo Anthony is a very good guy by everybody's account. I have nothing against him, the man, him, the person. As a competitor, I'm looking at his results as a basketball player in the 14 years of his career. And the breakdown goes like this. Four of his 14 seasons, he missed the playoffs altogether. Eight of his 14 seasons, he lost in the first round of the playoffs. One time in his NBA career did he lose in the conference semifinals. And yes, one time, and one time only, he made it to and lost in the conference finals. And this has never seemed to bother him. What I mean by that is, again, his long-standing desire to defy Phil Jackson and stay in New York despite the fact that New York sucked and he was going to be nowhere near winning a championship, the kind of thing that, you know, always every NBA star knows is going to put the legacy cap on their career. He's willing to stay and play in New York despite all of the negativity, not willing to, demanding to, because he likes New York. He likes to be there. And his wife tried to put that on the no, he's a great dad. His estranged wife a couple of days ago said, no, he's a great dad. He just wants to stay near his son. And I live in New York with my son, with our son. That's a nice little spin. But it's been made clear by so many people around him. He don't want to play anywhere else because he loves New York. That's it. He went to school there. He went to Syracuse there. Now he plays there with the Knicks. And he would rather stay, collect the max contracts he can from the Knicks, lose, never make the playoffs again, live in the Big Apple where he is so happy, then go out and compete for a championship. Run the risk of going like LeBron James into the finals and losing. Run the risk of going into a playoff team and have to perform under pressure situations that he has never been able to perform well under. I'm not a fan of that competitiveness or lack thereof of Carmelo Anthony. And for that reason, I'm hoping that the Cavaliers hear those rumors that Carmelo would be willing to accept less as long as the trade that was made between the Knicks would be between the Knicks and the Cavaliers. I'm hoping the Cavaliers aren't listening. The good news for Jim, for you and me, if you agree with me on that, the good news is they're not, because they don't have a GM to listen anyway.
Yeah.
Who right. could be listening?
I would say in a twisted way, the only other quote-unquote good news out of this whole potential is I don't think there would be necessarily a trade involved if it's the straight-up buyout, which could happen sometime this summer. Usually when you think buyouts in the NBA, you're thinking, oh, you mean February right after the All-Star game. No, there's that chance now. And for a technical contract for the Cavaliers, there's only two options for free agents that aren't their own. Veterans minimum of about $1.6 million. Mid-level taxpayer mid-level exception, $5.1 million. That's all they can offer.
That makes it irrelevant for Carmelo Anthony. He's not going to play for that.
That's what I was speculating when I was talking about all this in place of you yesterday, because the Chris Paul trade went down and these talks of Melo because Phil Jackson, you know, stepped down or mutually stepped down earlier in the day before the Chris Paul trade. And that's kind of what I said for Melo and even for the Dwayne Wade rumors that are out there on a possible buyout eventually too. I can't see a universe, even if they have all that money from the buyout, I can't see a universe where either of those two players would accept a veteran's minimum of 1.6 or a $5.1 million one-year mid-level exception deal.
It would never be that. Well, like I said, it would be as Stephen A. Smith is reporting with the trade situation. He would accept a no-trade clause and less money in a buyout situation. He would waive his no-trade clause if he got to go play with LeBron in Cleveland and hopefully, you know, ride that train to a finals. I don't think it makes the Cavaliers better, by the way, if it happens, first of all. And second of all, like I said, just in a general sense, even if it did make them better on the court, I don't think his competitiveness is what it would need to be. I don't think he's ever been driven by winning the whole thing. It's never been his career deciding factor. All right, we'll talk more about that later, though, but let me get Tim and Toledo on the air before the top of the hour, because he wants to go back to the baseball conversation and talk about Justin Verlander possibly going to his beloved pinstripe punks, the New York Yankees. Hey, Tim, how are you?
Hi, Bob, how are you?
Good, brother. What do you think? You want JV up there?
No.
No?
No.
How come?
The Yankees are 1 year away. They just promoted two guys this week.
Yeah?
They have three good pitchers. The guy from the Cubs who hurt his arm, who's a third baseman, an outfielder, and the best of the whole bunch is a 19-year-old guy named Blake Rutherford, who last year was Baseball America High School Player of the Year, and the Yankees managed to buy him out of his commitment to Vanderbilt. He had a super year last year. He's really going to be good. And The Yankees have been struggling to get rid of all these damn contracts.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, taking on Justin Verlander would be a step backward.
You know, if you really believe that you're a year away, I would agree, because he is a long-term buy, as we talked about. He's got a couple more years after this year and at pretty big dollars. You could get Detroit to eat, if the package of prospects is right, you could get Detroit to eat some of those or some of that, those dollars. But if you really think that, you know, this is a team that's, you know, if you win the division and you like your chances, or you feel like you're going to win the division, you got to make the decision by the end of July, of course. But if you feel like you're going to win the division, and if you, you know, kind of look at player for player and scout out the Houston Astros, your likely strongest competition to go to the World Series, and you feel like you're a pitcher away, I wouldn't surprise me if the Yankees would pull the trigger on that and say, we're not a year away. We're ready to do this right now.
Well, they've already lost 3 out of 4 games to the Astros this year.
Yeah, well, so did a lot of
teams. They're going to Houston tomorrow, and I just don't think it's a good idea. The only two big, really huge contracts they have left are Sabathia's, which is over at the end of the year.
Yep.
And they're still paying A-Rod to sit on the beach or whatever the hell he's doing.
Yeah, that's it. That is exactly. He's doing a little baseball analysis for Fox, too.
Yes.
Hey, Tim, I got to run, my friend. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. It's always good to talk to you, even though you do like those bums from the Bronx.
Don't talk
never
like
be a fan of that, but I
see it'll be the end of a great friendship.
Thank you, Tim.
Bye.
All right, appreciate it. All right, let's get a timeout here for the top of the hour Sports Center. Don't forget, I got more Hens tickets coming up in the next hour, and I want to talk more about the NBA. And if you happen to be a Cavaliers fan, how do you feel about that report that Stephen A. Smith was giving, that Carmelo Anthony would waive his no-trade clause for one team and one team only, and that would be to come to the Cavaliers. What are you thinking? Let's get into that as we continue right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
We got to do the right thing for the franchise. You got to get over, you know, that Chris is going to leave. I still believe our situation was better. Chris didn't believe that. But right after that, you got to go to work. And that's what we did. Chris and I had a very good relationship. Did we have a great relationship all the time? No. When you're the head coach, you're going to have days when you don't get along with your players. And then you're going to have days when you get along great. That's just the nature of the beast. And that's called coaching. So there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm going to be clear again. Chris left because he felt like he had a better chance to win. All the other stuff is no fun because it's not true.
With Chris, the biggest thing is there'll be, you know, a Hall of Famer on the floor all the time. And he's one of the smartest players I've ever been around. And James is really smart. So it gives you a real chance to be able just to figure things out and try to make it the best it can be. But, you know, we were really good offensively last year. I mean, Daryl can tell you the numbers. There's no reason why we're not better. And it's still a long ways to go to Golden State. And at the bottom line is you see Golden State playing, you go, whoa, you know, we don't want to play for second. Nobody wants to play for second. So we're trying to get up there and be a legitimate contender.
There's a lot of pressure on James, especially once we got to the playoffs. Chris and him are going to carry each other through the season, get us in a good spot, good seed, and then in the playoffs we are so much stronger to face who we're going to face in the playoffs. With James Harden in his prime and Chris Paul in his prime, this gives us a real shot to chase you know, the juggernaut teams that are out there and puts us right there with them.
Half the guys they traded weren't on the team at the start of the day. But they've saved themselves assets that they can still use in another trade. They've saved their exception, so they could still theoretically trade for a guy like Paul George and then still have a couple of options to go out and sign players. From a salary cap manipulation standpoint, this is grade A stuff. The Clippers did a good thing today. They realized something was over, and they executed something to help their team. I go back to one of the darkest days in the history of the Cleveland Cavaliers franchise, the day they lost LeBron James. They agreed to a sign and trade with the Miami Heat and later used an asset from that to trade for Kevin Love 4 years later.
I'm not saying it's a lot less, but I've learned that he's made it very, very clear that the one team that he would accept the buyout for is Cleveland. Definitely so. And I've also heard that the Knicks are aware that he wants out, that now is the time that he needs to be gone. And obviously Phil Jackson and James Dolan were on a different page in terms of what it would require in order for him to be gone, because Dolan loved the guy and wants him to stay. But he has reached a point where he believes it's time that he needs to go. It just has to be the right situation. Obviously with a buyout, you're talking about taking less. And that's the one team he would take less for.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, hour number two is underway right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. If you want to be one of Toledo's sports callers, do so at 866-240-1065. A lot of NBA free agency talk, trade talk, hot stove action kind of stuff, if you will. Big deal made yesterday, as you know, with Chris Paul going to the Houston Rockets. And today, all of the fallout. And Doc Rivers, to say he is a little bit disappointed with some of the rumors as to why Chris Paul wanted to go and leave, has made it very clear that he went because he wanted to go play with James Harden. That's it. Quote, he left because he wanted to be with James Harden. Let's not get that twisted. He told the LA Times, I wish him well. I have no problem with that. The problem comes with a lot of other people and a lot of other rumors. As Doc Rivers said, first he left because of DJ, DeAndre Jordan, that he didn't get along with him. He says, then he left because of Blake. He didn't get along with him. And now he left because of Austin, which is Doc Rivers' son, which is the most recent report, that he didn't like the fact that Austin Rivers gets such a prominent role with his team without deserving it, and more importantly, that he wouldn't be allowed to, Doc Rivers wouldn't allow Austin to be part of a trade package that could have netted them one of Chris Paul's best friends, Carmelo Anthony. But Blake says, or excuse me, but Doc Rivers says, we know he didn't leave because of any of that. Michael Eaves, as I mentioned, ESPN's Michael Eaves, reported late yesterday that Paul and a number of other team members of the team thought Rivers acted entitled because his dad was the coach and president of basketball ops. He thought Rivers treated his son favorably compared to the rest of the team, and he cited a source who said the following, quote, Chris despises Doc. Despises Doc. That's a quote. And said he was particularly upset because of the trade that would have let Carmelo Anthony become a Clipper. Quote, that event led Paul to feel that keeping his son on the roster was more important to Doc than improving the team, and that's one of the reasons why he wanted out. Then there's Mike Wise of The Undefeated, as I mentioned, who said, no, Chris Paul asked Doc Rivers to start Austin Rivers at midseason. When Doc declined, Chris Paul grew angry. So it wasn't necessarily that he was getting too much favorable treatment, but that he wouldn't let him play when he should have. Rivers expressed his distaste, Austin that is, for how things ended with Paul. According to Turner, I hate the way it ended. I wish we could have ended it better as far as winning, but as a franchise, we love where we're at. He also weighed in via Twitter, did Austin Rivers, about the controversy, saying these false rumors are comedy. So fictional, it's actually amusing. People will say or do anything to get attention. A lot of clowns out there with the clown emoji, which kind of makes it funny for whatever reason. But that's where things were with that massive story. And because, as mentioned, Carmelo Anthony did not go to L.A., and of course he would not waive his no-trade clause while he was in New York, while Phil Jackson was doing everything but publicly shoving him out the door and saying, get out, you're not wanted here, which he kind of did. And Carmelo Anthony still said, too bad, I'm staying here in New York, that's where I want to be. Even with this terrible franchise, even with this losing team that has no hope of getting better anytime soon, that's where I want to be. Carmelo Anthony now is potentially ready to say, okay, I will move it. I will leave New York by accepting a buyout and moving his way over to the Cleveland Cavaliers. You heard a little bit of the Stephen A. Smith comments in that montage at the top of the hour that Jim just played for you. Here is a little bit more of it with Mike Greenberg this morning.
Carmelo would accept a buyout to go to Cleveland. Are you talking about accepting less than the whole $54 million that he is owed? You're saying he would take some of that money. Yeah, go ahead.
Correct. I'm not saying it's a lot less, but I've learned that he's made it very, very clear that the one team that he would accept the buyout for is Cleveland. Definitely so. And I've also heard that the Knicks are aware that he wants out, that now is the time that he needs to be gone. So they're definitely entertaining something. Obviously, Phil Jackson and James Dolan were on a different page in terms of what it would require in order for him to be gone, because Dolan loved the guy and wants him to stay. But he has reached a point where he believes it's time that he needs to go. It just has to be the right situation. But I learned from some league sources that he's made it very, very clear that when we talk buyout, think Cleveland Cavaliers, because obviously with a buyout, you're talking about taking less. And that's the one team he would take less for. That may not necessarily be the case with Houston. In order for Houston to get something done, it would probably require a trade. But he would definitely accept the buyout to go to Cleveland. But this is Carmelo Anthony we're talking about here. He might take less, but it ain't going to be a lot less.
So that's a really interesting the way Jim, that Stephen A. Smith explained all of that. Because as he said, he would accept a buyout to go to Cleveland, but a trade to go to Houston. So are we talking, it sounds ludicrous to think that Carmelo Anthony would go to Cleveland, even if he loves LeBron James and they're good friends, which they are, to play for the mid-level exception, but it would require a trade for him to go to Cleveland. Houston. Are we talking about the buyout being enough money, close to the $54 million, that he's going to be paid essentially by the Knicks through those buyout dollars to play for the Cavaliers? So his money might be from Cleveland just that mid-level exception amount, but his salary is being picked up by the team that buys it out, which would be the New York Knicks. And so the Cavaliers would lose nothing in order to bring him in. Is that what we're talking about?
Because he only used
the word trade with Houston. And I was under the impression, and remain so, that it would have to be a trade for him to come to Cleveland, unless I'm just misreading the entire situation.
No, because remember, in a buyout situation, it's just funky because it could happen in the summer. Again, in the NBA, we're used to the buyout things happening right after the All-Star break,
right,
in that kind of neighborhood in February. But what happens when a guy gets bought out? Like think Darren Williams earlier this year gets bought out. That technically makes him a free agent. And
right,
that's the impression that I'm getting, as well, that he would get enough from the buyout that
would be his salary,
more or less,
essentially.
Because they
owe him what, $54 million for 2 years,
something like that. Yeah,
they owe him $54 million for 2 years in New York.
Right.
So if they bought him out, and you heard Stephen A. say not much less than 54, but he might take less in a buyout if it meant he got to go to Cleveland.
Right.
So does that mean, let's say it's 44, for the sake of argument?
Okay.
And they give him $44 million in a buyout, which is up front, right? A buyout is up front.
Yes.
So he takes that $44 million and says, okay, essentially I get $44 million
now
to leave there,
right,
and play, say, for example, if he goes to Cleveland, it would be on that middle level exception deal.
Right.
I just apply how much they gave me, which is 22 for this year and 22 for next year.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the middle level exception worth? About 6 million?
The taxpayer middle level exception that the Cavs have access to is about 5.1, 5.3. Let's call
okay.
it 5.
So in his mind, the way it works is, I'm still not a mid-level guy.
Right.
I'm making roughly $27 million this year to play for the Cavaliers instead of for the Knicks.
Right. Because
they bought me out for 44 in a scenario like that. Again,
uh-huh.
It's just completely.
And then he would be a free agent, and the Cavs would be paying 5.
And the Knicks would be paying the other 22 in such a scenario.
Right. That's the impression that I'm getting, because, again, if somebody's a free agent, which in a buyout situation Melo would be,
yeah,
then that's all the Cavs could play with, mid-level and the veterans minimum, which is for a guy of, and that's done by age. So
do that to come to Cleveland if the other part of Stephen A's report, and he gets it from his sources as he gets it from his sources, if the other part of the report was he would accept a trade to Houston, why wouldn't he accept a trade to Cleveland? Why must it be in a buyout situation? Remember, he's got all of the power because of his no-trade clause, which is part of what led to the parting of ways with Phil Jackson with the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
He's got all of that power. If he can say, I'll waive my trade, no-trade clause to go to Houston just without a buyout, I'm just a member of the Knicks, and they're going to trade me. Why wouldn't he do the same thing for Cleveland then? Why would that have to be a buyout situation? And if it is, I think it's a dead issue, because I'm not sure the Knicks would do it, considering they just bought out Phil Jackson,
right,
for $24 million. Are they going to give Phil Jackson $24 million to walk away and not work, and then hire somebody to be the club president, and then give Carmelo Anthony $54 million or close to it to walk away and not work for them as well? It just doesn't make any sense to me. They would want something back. What would be the incentive for them to buy him out? Here, Melo, here's, say, $50 million. Now go away and give us nothing in return. Why wouldn't they say, Melo, you really want to go to Cleveland? We're not buying you out. You're going to live on your current contract, but the Cavs will have to pick it up because we're going to trade you to them. Will you waive it? And then you've got to get into that whole Kevin Love thing that, mm-hmm, I was talking about. I'm not optimistic that a buyout and signing with the Cavaliers would happen, I'm going to go back to my original guns here and stick to them and say I think it would have to be in a trade situation, much like he said he would do with the Rockets.
Now, there's a lot of things, obviously, in this to kind of unpack it to figure out where it's all coming from. My first guess is his agent has probably gone over with him for the buyout versus trade if you want to go play with LeBron in Cleveland, which is, well, we kind of attempted, at least rumored, the trade route back in February, and the Cavs were not going to send Kevin Love to the Knicks for you. So a trade to the Cavs is probably out the door. Now, some of this gets recalibrated because I'm less confident of a situation with the buyout happening now than I was 36 hours ago when Phil Jackson was still in charge.
Me too.
And that's part of it right here. So my only guess is why the different dynamic that Stephen A's talking about between Cleveland and Houston. My only guess at this point is his agent must have been smart enough to tell him already, you know, if you want to go play with LeBron, based on everybody's situation, even with your no-trade clause and you waive it, the trade isn't the way to happen. It'll have to be Knicks buy you out, you become a free agent.
Which isn't going to happen. I'm sorry. They're just not going to do it.
That's what I said yesterday. I don't understand in what universe he or Dwayne Wade, with those rumors, would accept that little pay, even if they have all that money in the bank from various buyouts. I don't see what universe we exist in that they would actually sign.
Well, I could see one of them doing it, like I said, in order to play with LeBron. You know, Carmelo might do that, and again, because in his mind, he's not working for that small amount. He's working for his current contract. He got it up front from the Knicks.
And that must be enough. And that might be another factor in here of why a buyout to go to Cleveland technically less.
But it would not happen. Like I said,
right.
I'm going to read two quick blurbs from the Cleveland side of things out there at the Plain Dealer. The Knicks just fired President Phil Jackson, partly because of his feud with Carmelo Anthony. New York owner James Dolan. I think I said Larry before. There's damn Dolans. James Dolan is not
done that too.
James Dolan is not going to just cut Anthony and pay him $55 million to play for someone else.
And without Phil Jackson, he's got less incentive to do that.
Anthony wants to stay in New York under the right circumstances. The second blurb: the new president/GM of the Knicks will probably have to be willing to keep Anthony unless he can work a trade. Remember, Anthony has a no-trade clause. The odds of him coming to the Cavs are extremely slim, at least right now. The new GM will probably make peace with Kristaps Porzingis, the young Knicks star who is feuding with Jackson, and Jackson was willing to trade the gifted 7'3" forward. So, I think it's kind of a dead issue. You know, Stephen A., like I said, his sources are his sources, and I'm not going to try to impugn anybody. He's been in, covering the NBA, and he's been in a lot of GMs' offices and a lot of agents' offices, and he's talked to a lot of players, certainly much more than I have or you have. So I'm not going to try to impugn it, but I think that's a big story just to get a big story and to say, here I am, this is my name, and I'm out here, and I'm finding out that Carmelo wants to go to the Cavs, and he would accept the buyout there. But the odds of a buyout, like I said, are slim and none, and slim left town with Phil Jackson.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with that. And this kind of thing goes with some of the other stuff that's been going around. This is another thing that I touched on a little bit yesterday with all these subjects, especially from that Cavs perspective and trying to meld them back together. And I don't know about you, Bob, but all this talk of a trade, obviously, it would have to involve Kevin Love, and we've gone over that. Are any of these buyouts?
And I don't think it makes them better. I'll tell you, and
exactly.
I'll let you finish your point, Jimmy. But I don't think losing Kevin Love to add Carmelo Anthony makes them better.
Wholeheartedly agree.
What does Carmelo Anthony bring? 24, 25 points a game? What's Kevin Love? 22? Is that 2 or 3 points going to be worth 7 less rebounds a game?
Thank you.
The outlet passing, the willingness to just be that piece that waits in the corner for his shot and doesn't have to be fed 19, 20 shots a game the way Carmelo plays. The defense, neither one of them is going to be an all-defensive player, but Kevin Love, I think, gives you better effort on that end of the floor. And Kevin Love has been a part of a championship team. Carmelo Anthony has never even kind of hinted that he wants to be,
right,
given that career rundown that I gave before and the fact that he said, no, I'm perfectly happy staying in New York where we suck, but I get paid and I get to live in the city of choice.
So
they're not a better basketball team with Carmelo Anthony than Kevin Love.
I agree.
Carmelo Anthony is thought of as a better player.
I completely agree. And then you zoom out and you think of how, Jimmy Butler's already been moved to Minnesota. Then the whole Paul George story, which won't go away, but I think Lakers, Celtics, and even Wizards of all people. And there was talk yesterday after the Chris Paul trade that the Rockets may want to try to get in on that. basically, what I'm trying to say is putting all of these different stories together from that Cavs perspective, I don't know about you, Bob, but as each day has gone by, and obviously still a lot to go, you know, Saturday the free agency period opens a week from today, players can start actually signing those contracts. I'm becoming less and less convinced that any big name or big trade is going to happen, and it's going to be the same, that the Cavs are only going to work around the periphery. Maybe re-sign a Korver, do
something
else. Which
is okay with me.
I'm fine. Yeah, I know. And that's something that we'll have to talk about more
people
as we keep going forward.
People think that there's a Kevin Durant counter move.
There's not.
There isn't, because there's only one of him, and the circumstances would have had to be perfect to get him. They were last year for Golden State. The circumstances are not perfect for anybody else. The salary cap is not being expanded again this year by some massive amount that would allow this to happen. And there is, like I said, only one second-best player in the world.
Yep.
There is no counter move to that. You have to do kind of what the Rockets just did. Hey, we played tough in the playoffs. You know, we had the third-best record in the West. We got to move closer. We got to get another star. Golden State has three stars, a fourth one if you count Draymond, which I do not. So we got now All-NBA Chris Paul, All-NBA James Harden, and we've got to probably add another piece, but it's a star. Daryl Morey pretty much said that at his press conference. He said, this is an arms race in the NBA today. You know, it's kind of like stockpiling nuclear weapons. Back when we had the Cold War going on with the USSR and the United States,
right. It's
an arms race. We got to have more than the next guy in order to compete for a championship, and Chris Paul is one of them. And so that's what people think you have to do, but there are only so many guys like that out there, and when you don't have them, and you already made the finals, and as I've said many times, despite the seemingly large gap between the Warriors and the Cavaliers, if a couple of things change, Kyle Korver hits a shot, you know, that's a very, very different series, a 2-1 series.
Sure.
You know, and then, of course, they won game four. They had a really, really great run at it. You know, they got blown out in the first two. The rest of them were really great runs. If they find a way to get Tristan Thompson, you know, off of whatever it was problem he had, and J.R. Smith, who was tremendous and scored 55 points in the final three games combined, he had four shots in the first two games. I don't think the gap, while it seems very, very large, and I said after the first two games that it was. It's a huge gap between the first best team mm-hmm. and the second best team in the NBA. The last three games of their series kind of changed my mind, and I don't think it's such a massive gap that you have to do anything like blow up your team and bring in a Carmelo Anthony or a Paul George. I think you can just retool around the edges, as we mentioned, expect better play from JR in the crunch, or in the clutch, crunch time. Expect better play from Tristan Thompson. Get Kyle Korver re-signed to a modest contract where he can stroke from out there and get much more athletic and defensive
right. With
your bench.
And basically,
I think those are the keys.
Right, and I agree with that. And kind of the way I'm wording this is to specifically Cavs fans who are thinking and want them to make that kind of big splash type move, basically the theme of what I'm telling you here is it's not happening. This team is more or less going to stand pat. Now, does that end up irking LeBron and all that stuff? Probably, but it's all...
It better not.
But it all makes up
for
it.
Why would it? He built this team.
I understand.
And he's the one who kind of put Dan Gilbert into the luxury tax hell that he's in and into the salary cap hell that he's in.
And they're a repeater, so those numbers are going
to
go up even more now.
You know, he's the one who demanded that JR get paid what he gets,
mm-hmm.
that Tristan gets paid what he gets, that Darren Williams be brought in, that Kyle Korver be brought in, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, come on. And he, of course, is the one who demanded when he first came back that they trade Andrew Wiggins for Kevin Love,
right.
who was going to be a max player against the cap compared to Andrew, who's going to be on a rookie deal for 3 years. And that would have given him more flexibility. So he... You know, LeBron has kind of built this thing, and he can't complain and be unhappy if they go
right.
back to battle next year with largely the same core of a roster, minus the changes on the periphery, you know, that they ended last year with.
Right, and basically what I'm saying is whether it irks LeBron or not or irks some Cavs fans, I'm basically my theme is I'm preparing for you guys to end up dealing with the fact that that's what it's going to end up being, most likely for the Cavs. And even in a standing pat scenario, the only possible scenario where they wouldn't make the NBA Finals, and I still think they would, I just think it would be much, much more competitive, is if the grumblings I'm hearing from the Celtics come to fruition. I do think they'll sign Gordon Hayward, and then there's, you know, talk that they're trying to stay involved, as I mentioned, with the Paul George thing.
Yeah.
If they were to acquire both, then I still favor the Cavs, but we actually have a competitive 6 or 7 game series in that case. But I still favor the Cavs to escape that. And then you're right back in the finals again for that minimum one more chance.
Right. And I think if that chance goes by the wayside, like I said, then LeBron leaves.
And I agree with that.
And it's rebuild time. And at least you would rebuild with Kyrie Irving still under contract and Kevin Love for another year.
Or at least you'd have both of them to send away for assets and players and future picks and things if you want to go that route in a post-LeBron by having at least both of those guys instead of just Kyrie,
which
as
I
we
would
mentioned.
Not do, by the way.
I don't think I would either. I got to believe that Kevin Love, Kyrie, no LeBron Cavs. Because remember, everyone will come back, well, look how bad they play when LeBron's in. No, different dynamic if you're going into the season knowing
as I've
he's
always
not
said,
there.
It would be a different game plan, a different offensive strategy, a different set. Everything runs through LeBron now.
Yep.
It wouldn't. It would be Kyrie as the centerpiece, and Kevin Love is his number two.
Yep.
They'd have to bring in a good, you know, young three to fill LeBron's spot, and then, you know, you still have JR, you still have
Tristan,
you, know, a lot of other
you still
guys,
have Tristan, Shump, yada, yada, yada. And I got to believe that's
wouldn't
in
fall
the,
into a,
right.
They wouldn't fall into a hole in the Eastern Conference.
Exactly. I got to believe that's still a playoff team that at least can get out of round one.
Our sweet deal of the week is ready for you, a six-person pack. VIP tickets to the African Wildlife Safari in Port Clinton. Tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, these tickets will go on sale. $131 six-pack value for just $25. That's right, six-pack VIP to the African Wildlife Safari in Port Clinton while supplies last tomorrow morning. Or you can get a freebie from me right now. Caller 5. Call 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. We'll give you that freebie, six-pack to the African Wildlife Safari in Port Clinton, and we are back right after this.
Zero, or you can visit our website at championcu.org.
The 4th of July is time when families get together for food, fun, and of course, fireworks. Miller Fireworks on Glengarry Road in Holland and J&W Fireworks on Route 2 in Oregon have been the most trusted and reliable fireworks stores in the area for over 50 years. They have everything you need to light up the skies this summer. Things that spin, swirl, crackle, and pop for the kids and for adults. Shells, balls, cones, and comets with huge breaks and bursts of color like you've never seen before. Miller Fireworks on Glengarry Road in Holland and J&W Fireworks on Route 2 in Oregon.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, as we do continue on the extravaganza, congratulations to John Steierwalt of Bowling Green. John won the tickets to the African Wildlife Safari in Port Clinton. Congratulations. Don't forget, that sweet deal goes on sale tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock at 106.5theticket.com. While supplies last, $131 prize pack for just $25. At 106.5theticket.com. So let's ask it this way. Is there any one player available for trade or free agency that you think, if the Cavaliers acquired, makes them better than the Warriors right now? Kush, is there anybody, if they got Paul George for Kevin Love, are they better than the Warriors? If they got Carmelo Anthony for Kevin Love, or in a buyout situation in which he does not, repeat, does not have to be traded for, but he gets his, you know, $54 million from the Knicks, and then the Cavaliers just pay him a mid-level exception, so he gets all of his money and he gets to play for a better team. Are they better than the Warriors? And before you answer that, consider the question of how the rotation works. Consider the rotation of consider the question of where he plays if Kevin Love and LeBron James and Tristan Thompson are all on the court at the same time, because he's a forward. He's a wing player.
Mm-hmm.
He cannot play a two. He certainly cannot defend a two. Hell, he can't even defend a three. Where does he play? Is he playing in place of Kevin Love? Is he playing in place of Tristan? Do they go without a center and just go with a bunch of, you know, kind of perimeter guys? How would he fit? And is it better than the Warriors? Because the Warriors, the NBA's model now, sometimes played even in the finals without a center. Zaza Pachulia was pretty much terrible. And when he was terrible for long enough, he sat. Sometimes they had JaVale McGee in there, but other times they just ran with their, you know, their quote-unquote smaller lineup. They had Clay and Steph and Kevin Durant, who's a center in his own right, really, and Draymond and Andre Iguodala. So does a Carmelo Anthony addition to LeBron, Kyrie, Love, JR, and Melo, for example, in that fivesome on the court at the same time, does that make them better than Golden State? And if your answer is no, none of these guys individually would make their roster automatically a favorite over Golden State, then I question whether or not it's something they want to blow up right now, given the fact like I said, that besides LeBron, they would still have their other two stars under contract for after 2018.
And that's such a tough question because, you know, are we talking whatever or at least playing in the ballpark that the Cavs have to play with, which is those smaller deals like the vet minimum, the mid-level, and a possible trade? Because, you know, I'm scanning through, for example, like the free agent list, and you know, you get to somebody like for example,
like a
Paul Millsap, who's a free agent for the Hawks. Well, the Cavs are never going to have the funds to sign him. So we're crossing off, you know, types of guys like that. So you're really looking.
We're talking about sign and trade situations in a case like that,
right?
You know, if he were to re-sign. And then make a trade again involving a Kevin Love or something like that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that make them better than the Warriors? And I don't think you can go through the list of free agents if you wish and answer the question. But for me, I've kind of glanced at it already, and I just don't think that matchup move is out there.
Yeah.
So to me, it's a matter of just improving on what you have from the bench standpoint and expecting better performances out of the guys that let you down in the couple of games where you really needed them.
Exactly. So there's not much that's going to be done there, although you'd like to see, you know, younger athletic. When you sign some of these periphery type guys, who will come off the bench, what you need is a little bit younger, you know, and more athletic. That's really the theme here. So as I'm scanning through, you know, some names, I'm trying to think of, you know, those types of guys. If he would accept a mid-level type contract, maybe somebody to come off the bench like a CJ Miles, who a former Cav, incidentally. And there's not a lot because if it's a free agent of any kind, they can only go those one of two routes. And that's way out of the price range of the vast majority of guys that are free agents right now. It just is what it is. And, you know, one last thing from my standpoint, Bob, on the Melo thing.
Yeah.
I would not want them in any universe. I don't really want him as a Cav either way, but I'll certainly feel a lot better about it if it's buyout and the Cavs don't have to give up any asset.
So in that scenario then, where the one I described, you know, playing small and running with the Warriors in the finals next year, does Kyrie matched up on Steph,
mm-hmm.
virtually, even though they don't always guard each other.
Sure.
But Kyrie and Steph, JR and Clay, Carmelo and Draymond, LeBron and KD, and it would be Carmelo and Andre Iguodala, I would imagine.
Or, that's assuming Andre Iguodala stays.
Oh, that's true. Just looking at last year's Warriors lineup, you're right. That would be a question mark, too. My point is just if you see a 5-on-5, which was kind of the majority of the time, was the rotation, the fivesome for the Warriors on the court. And last year that was the Cavaliers' majority with the exception of Thompson in there. Now mm-hmm. that he would be replaced by Carmelo in a situation like that. But would that fivesome be better than or be a favorite against the Warriors? Now, take out of the equation if you can, and it's kind of impossible to, but try.
Okay.
The chemistry factor that the Warriors have been doing this.
Yeah.
And now they have a full year of Durant under their belt with them, and the rest of those guys have been doing it for the last couple or three. And that's why they've won 67, 73, and then 67 or whatever it was.
It was 67 again.
Was it two 67s wrapped around a 73?
That's right, yeah. Yep.
I thought I remembered that. Anyway, you take away the fact that they're going to be better at it because they've done it, and just look at it, assuming the Cavaliers develop the same chemistry. Kyrie's an all-star. Carmelo's an all-star and probable Hall of Famer. LeBron is an all-star and a Hall of Famer. Kevin Love is an all-star, may or may not be a Hall of Famer by the time his career is over. And J.R. Smith is not an all-star, but as you know, when he's right, he's a very dangerous guy. Defensively, too, by the way.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when he decides to shoot, you get 25 points out of him like you did in Game 5. How does that work? How does that match up? Can we definitively say that the Warriors would still win in 5 or 6 or 7? Or are we in a little bit of a better situation there, despite not wanting Carmelo, as you and I kind of both have expressed?
I think you'd be in a little better situation. I don't think there's anything really anybody can do in this entire league that would get them favored in a game or a series over the Warriors. That's just the state of where they are right now. But it would help them, again, especially if they don't have to give up anything in that scenario. I'm scanning through as you were asking all that too. Here's a possibility of a free agent type that you could get for one of those minimums or mid-level. He played with LeBron in the Heat. Cleveland State guy Norris Cole is an unrestricted free agent. He's not going to be that expensive. Again, I'm just scanning through the unrestricted list by teams and seeing what names kind of – because what I think the Cavs need off the bench are basically the so-called 3-and-D guys to be able to defend and be able to hit the outside kind of shot, because the Cavs play that way, you know, offensively, as we know. So you need guys that can play a little bit of D and make the outside shot. You don't need any necessarily big guys. And that Tavares guy, I was looking at the Cavs contracts. He's technically signed at like $1.3 million. So if they want that extra big, you know, after Love Thompson and Channing Frye, the thing that kept, you know, as if it was bad karma last year, remember with Birdman and Bogut and all that, and they signed Tavares last day. And then remember he broke it, busted a bone, if I'm not mistaken, one of the practices before the East Finals. He could be kept. And you don't have to do anything with bigs, especially because, again, as you mentioned, matching up against Golden State, you're probably not going to play big. So what you're looking for are backcourt or, at worst, a small forward type who could play some D and shoot some threes. That's really what you're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good summary, and that's a pretty good analysis. One other quick note, actually, here, just while we're talking about all these things. The Rockets, after acquiring Chris Paul, you know, because we're sitting here saying, you know, could, and you even said it, could anybody technically put a team together and say they might be favored over the Warriors because of their big three? And again, I refuse to call Draymond Green a big part of the big four. How about what the Rockets are trying to do? They've acquired Chris Paul, all NBA. They've acquired or continue to employ the runner-up in the MVP voting, James Harden, all NBA. What if they're the ones who end up with Paul George? Not the Cavaliers, not the Celtics. Because reports are exactly that, that they want to form their own quote-unquote super team. Would Chris Paul, James Harden, and Paul George be potentially a better matchup than Steph Curry matched up against Paul, Klay Thompson matched up against James Harden, and Paul George, who's got the length and who's a pretty capable defensive player against all-NBA Kevin Durant? Because that's the other one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're looking at acquiring him, and I'm not sure what it would take, but that they would have to send. They sent a bunch of their best chips, obviously, to the Clippers in order to get Chris Paul.
And other chips that they acquired that same day, like as I reported, the SportsCenter, Darren Hilliard of the Pistons, sent to Houston for $1 million of cold hard cash, turned right around hours later and then sent in that deal.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and that's why. You know, I mean, that's exactly why. I mean, there's another story. Why the Rockets traded for every fringe NBA player known to man, and the reason why is because they were going to package a whole bunch of them for these, you know, Chris Paul George type stars. They're going to get as many guys as possible and move them on and to teams that are trying to rebuild or that are going to lose their stars, like the Pacers, et cetera, and do that. So what do you think if it was a Chris Paul, James Harden, Paul George nucleus against a Clay or a Steph, a Clay, Kevin Durant nucleus?
I think it'll be a fun matchup. I don't think the Warriors are going to steamroll them and sweep them like they did everybody in the West. And it makes the Rockets the blatant number two, sorry, San Antonio, in that tough Western Conference.
I think it would vault the Rockets to the position of second best in the West.
Right.
And in that, I think you could argue it would vault the Rockets into the position of NBA's second best, because I think the West is that much better still, especially at the top.
I tend to agree, and you got to factor in the Cavs may play lackluster regular season and only win 53 or so games again.
Yep. So that would be something very interesting. All right, this is also very interesting as we are in the final segment of winding down. Jimmy Butler is not without his critics. I mean, on draft night, everybody went, oh, my God. The Minnesota Timberwolves just stole Jimmy Butler from the Chicago Bulls. What in the heck are the Bulls thinking? The Bulls took, you know, Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn and a draft pick, and they gave up the best player. They could have gotten a lot more for Jimmy Butler than that. Well, Jimmy Butler, however, is not without his critics. And Jimmy Butler's skin, let's just say it might not be the thickest when it comes to that criticism, because he is ready to defend himself and his game and his ability against any and all comers. And he's not talking about the press conference. He's talking about personally. Listen.
This is not frustrating. It's expected. Somebody's got to take the blame. I'll be that guy. I'm okay with it. I'm fine. Everybody is entitled to their opinion. But with that being said, my phone's in my back pocket right now. If whoever has anything to say to me, feel free. 773-899-6071. So if you want to interview, there you have it. Please do.
Jimmy Butler.
Remember that.
At a televised press conference in Minnesota, gave his personal cell phone number out and said, call me if you want to criticize me, and we'll talk. Let's have it. Tell me what you got to tell me, and I'll tell you what I got to tell you. 773-899-6071. Now, some of the good people at SB Nation said, let's try it out. Let's dial up 773-899-6071 and take Jimmy Butler up on his offer.
Jimmy Butler, sorry I couldn't get to the phone, but leave your name and number, and I'll hit you back. If you got any beef, definitely leave a message.
There it is. It's really his. It is Jimmy Butler's phone number. They dialed it up and put it on Twitter. And according to the story, Jim, that I just got this from, bother very quickly, because every time they've tried it, they get a message from Verizon saying the number's unavailable. So the chances are either A, he realized, what the hell did I just do, and changed his number, or it has been so overloaded with calls and it's still legitimately his number, but it's just jammed the circuits.
Right.
And Verizon can't handle the overload.
I think it's probably the latter, because you rarely see an athlete do something like that. And incidentally, by the way, did you catch the part in the beginning of that clip you played? I could swear I heard somebody in the peanut gallery yell at sour grapes.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I didn't know. Actually, I heard him yell. I just didn't know what he yelled.
I think it was sour grapes.
It's not.
Here, listen up.
Frustrating.
One more time.
It's expected. Somebody's got to take the blame. I'll be that guy. I'm okay with it.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Sour grapes.
I'm fine. Everybody is entitled to their opinion. But with that being said, my phone's in my back pocket right now. If whoever has anything to say to me, feel free. 773-899-6071. So if you want to interview, there you have it. Please do.
I tell you what. You know, I may have to go back on it when I say he's got thin skin and he's willing to argue with anybody. It takes a pretty doggone confident dude to give that out. Probably a little bit crazy, too. But Jimmy Butler's personal cell phone number, once again, since he did it, is 773-899-6071. Kush, hit that up after the show. He said, you want an interview? Here I am. I'd love to have the interview. And you know the first thing I would criticize about him? What do you think it would be?
I have no idea.
It's not his defense. It's not his jump shot. It's not his ability to penetrate. It's not his passing. It's not his leadership. But, bro, you got to get a fade going or something, man. You got to do something about the hair. You got to get a fade. You got to do something a little bit neater. I'm not a fan of the look. I really like Jimmy Butler as a player. I think he's a very good dude, and he's obviously a confident young man willing to give out his cell phone number. But if I'm going to criticize him, I can't criticize the game. The game is probably top 15. Fair? Top 15?
Yeah, I'd say 20? So. I think he's done enough to be certainly in the top 20.
Definitely top 20. Maybe even top 15.
Yeah.
I love the game. Not a fan of the look. I like it. I like the fact. You know, to me, it's just a little bit too crazy. It's not Birdman stupid. there are guys like that I just cannot say. It's not Kelly Olynyk bad. But it's bad. You got to get that fade going or something, bro. That's the only thing that I would say. All right. Hey, we're just about done. I want to do what I promised and hook up one more listener, one more Hens fan with a pair of tickets to Saturday's game. Mud Hens and Clippers. It is at Fifth Third, obviously, and it's on Saturday the 1st. If you would like to go, I've got one final pair of tickets we will hook you up with right now. If you are the, let's go, seventh caller, lucky seven. Seventh caller at 866-240-1065. And you can enjoy the Hens and the Clippers on Saturday, courtesy of your friends here at ESPN 106.5. All right, that is all the time that we've got. Thanks for being a part of the show. Drive Time is coming up next. Mike Miller is not in. Jim Cushlin is. And you are going to enjoy the sports stylings of Mr. Cushlin right after this on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, have a great one.
We
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.